our goal is to make a vehicle in Zimbabwe, mass production vehicle that is going to be, sold in Africa and beyond, but made in Zimbabwe. We want to become your Daimler, we want to become your Mitsubishi, we want to become your Toyota.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 11th episode of The Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship. My name is Lump, the Web3 guy, but today I'm actually taking a quick break from Web3 and talk about the other side of the podcast, which is entrepreneurship. And here with me today, Mr. Kuda Mutenda, who is the chairman and CEO of the Moana Group in Zimbabwe. Kuda, can you give a quick introduction about yourself?
Hello, Lump. How are you, my brother? I'm very happy to be on your program. Thanks for inviting me. And yeah, I'm Kuda Mutenda. I'm a Zimbabwean living in Zimbabwe, working in Zimbabwe, and one of the agents of change in Zimbabwe, trying to bring upon the Zimbabwe that we all want to see in Zimbabwe. I've lived in many countries, as you know, more than 20 countries altogether. And right now, I'm now back in Zimbabwe after studying abroad, working abroad, and living abroad for more than 15 years. I'm now back in Zimbabwe, starting a new greenfield operation called Moana Group, which is an automotive solutions company, providing spare parts, service and maintenance, and doing the manufacturing of spare parts here in Zimbabwe. That's the long and short of our operation here in Zimbabwe.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, so I think before we dive into your main current company, let's talk a bit about your background. Yeah, because maybe to begin with your from your journey, the first journey into Japan, and you know what you did over there and background there, and then what actually made you come back, right? So yeah, feel free to share with us whatever you think would be relevant.
Yeah, sure. I think my story begins where I grew up. I grew up in a place called Mfakose, which is a low income area here in Zimbabwe, which I'm very proud about as well. That's where I've got all of my roots. And I've been very fortunate that I grew up in a very loving environment with lots of love, lots of people to support me. And after that, I went to high school at a place called Prince Edward School in Harare, one of the oldest schools in Zimbabwe, and maybe one of the oldest schools in Africa, actually, because this year the school turned 125 years old as an institution, which is quite an achievement, because that's a very strong institution with an old boy or an alumni almost every press across the whole globe. And I was lucky enough that my uncle, my mom's brother, was living in Japan after finishing my upper six, which is my 13th year of education here in Zimbabwe. And then he offered me the chance to come to Japan to study. Under his sponsorship, his generosity, I came to Japan at the age of 18, actually, after high school. I went to a language school called Tokyo Language School in Shinjuku. I did 1 year, 6 months of language course, which was very grueling, because I had to master Japanese in less than 18 months to take the Noru Shiken, which is the test that qualifies you to be a native level speaker in Japanese.
What level did you take? Did you take N1, N2?
N1.
Okay. Well, impressive. And you passed the test right away?
Yes, I passed.
That is very impressive, yeah.
And then we did that for 18 months. After that, I went to a Japanese university called Tokyo University of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. To Nodai. I did my first graduate studies in development economics and biobusiness studies. After that, I went to for my master's again in Japan. This was now around 2011. I came to Japan in 2005. Around 2011, I went to a school called Sophia University, which is in Yotsuya in Tokyo. I did my master's in global business studies, and I also did a second master's as well at a school called United Nations University in Tokyo. I did International Peace and Security. So I did two masters. Wow. And after that, I went to work for a Japanese company. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm very lucky that, you know, when I was doing my master's at Sophia University, I still hold the record for the person that was able to graduate in 1 year.
For a 2-year
program. Yes.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. Yeah. How did you do that?
I worked extra hard. I wanted to go and work. And so when others were on vacation, I was at school, studying, taking extra lessons, studying with my seniors. And I was lucky that while I was there as well, I also worked, my part-time job was working at a reception for the SJ House. That is where all the Jesuit priests live. So my job was basically just sitting there at the reception and receiving calls and receiving visitors that came to see the Catholic priest. So I was literally on a desk. So instead of me just sitting playing games, I was studying. So when others were working, I was studying. And I did I think I still hold that feat in Japan for having finished the master's. Soki Sotsugyo.
Impressive.
I was very lucky.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went to work for a company called Sugino Machine.
Mm-hmm.
This was now around 2013.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting company because it is cutting edge technology. And I was coming from Sophia University, which is a very high level university in Japan. And when I went there, having my master's, I was not expecting that my first job would be in an office somewhere, the laptop, you know, talking to people, making presentations. But then everyone that was coming in spent their first 3 months cleaning the company, like wearing overalls, going around the campus in Toyama, cleaning cars, cutting grass, more like manual labor.
Yeah.
And I hated that part. But now, coming to realize that it actually helps create character in people. And more than anything else, the most important thing that you can have in life is to humble yourself.
Yeah.
The whole experience humbled us before our seniors in the company. And I enjoyed that. I was working in the International Planning Division in Toyama, responsible for the new office in Indonesia, in South Africa, and translating documents. So it was very eye-opener. It's my first job as a professional. I did that for 1 year, and then I changed jobs. Then I applied for the Daimler Top Talent Career Program.
Yeah.
And then I was drafted into Mitsubishi Fuso Truck and Bus Company, which is a child company of the Daimler Group, which again was now a new different paradigm. And again, the same thing happened to me because we spent the first 3 months again, now in Daimler, but we spent the first 3 months again doing the same kind of manual labor on the production plant. I was responsible for fixing crankshafts. For drilling holes in crankshafts.
Really?
So for 3 months, I was just drilling holes in crankshafts until I became more like the expert in drilling holes in crankshafts. And I remember I was so tired that when I went for lunch, I would have what they used to call the donburi.
Yeah.
A very big bowl of rice and curry and meat because I was very tired. And these are lessons that have actually come back to me. Because right now, even in my own companies, or people that come in to join the company, they've started doing manual labor. They start doing hard work on the production line, meeting clients on the forefront, at the lowest of low positions which you can enter. Even if you're coming to become as a marketing executive, you spend your first 3 months, sometimes even 6 months, working on the production line to understand the product, to appreciate the people who are working on the production line, because that is where our business starts from, by producing good quality products.
That makes sense, yeah.
I was lucky that in this talent career program, I had to go to different countries. I went to Germany, again, did the same thing as well, production line, fixing cars. In Germany, yes. The same thing happens as well. To understand and to appreciate and to value the product. So you know that when this is a truck, Mercedes-Benz, Freightliner, Mitsubishi, whatever brand that we had, we had to appreciate what is required in making that product. And that gives you a relationship, ownership with the product itself as well. Even though I was working in strategy, I had to spend some time on the production line. And then after that, I remember we went to Brazil, went to India, went to Kenya, Korea, America as well. We traveled quite a lot, almost all the continents where Daimler is operating. And I was fortunate that I always met good people, wonderful people. Mr. Mark Listosayer, Ilan Elad, Mr. Suzuki, Toshiyuki, Mr. Mori, Mr. Yoshida, no, wonderful people, beautiful people, and you still keep in touch with most of them, even though I've left the company, and they still continue to offer a mentorship role on my new path as an entrepreneur here in Zimbabwe. So I think your network is a net worth, and that network that I created in Japan and across all the countries where I visited still is what Bona Group as a company is built upon. Those experiences, those ideas that we got from different countries as well.
Mm.
And actually, the idea of us being here in Zimbabwe is because we got appreciation of what it means to produce things as a country. Because no country has succeeded without industrial production of things.
Mm.
In Zimbabwe, it's a very rich country in terms of mineral resources. We've got all the 68 strategic minerals that are required for any developing country. You've got gold, platinum, uranium, iron ore, lithium, you know, everything that you need in Zimbabwe, all the minerals that we have, all the best metals, we've got very rich deposits here in Zimbabwe.
Interesting.
The way we failed as a country is that we failed to develop those minerals by having a value addition of those minerals here in Zimbabwe. That's why the country continues to be so poor, even though we are a major exporter of most of the core minerals, gold, platinum, bronze, nickel, and stuff, and copper as well, lithium. So Bona Group, you know, our motto is that made in Zimbabwe, by Zimbabweans, for Africa and beyond. That means as a vision, our motto is to make things in Zimbabwe, being made by Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe, for the export market, which is Africa and beyond. And when we realize our dream, the next 50 to 100 years, what we have built right now, the seed that we have planted here in Zimbabwe, it will be your Mercedes-Benz, your Mitsubishi, your Hyundai, your Samsung. That's the kind of growth vision that we have for the company. And that's where we're going as well as a company.
I see. Can you tell us a bit more about, like, so I know you're working at Daimler, right? I mean, but like, what was like the first thing that, well, what was the thing that made you come back to Zimbabwe from Japan, right? To begin your own company. Can you tell us that?
Actually, if you meet anyone that met me when I first came to Japan in 2005, my dream was to learn something tangible, learn a skill in the developing country, and take that back to Zimbabwe. Actually, when I left Zimbabwe in 2005, I promised my mom that I'm coming back to Zimbabwe to build this country.
That's you kept your promise.
And I kept my promise. Though it didn't come in at the time that I wanted it to come. I wanted to come back after 5 years, but I came back after 15 years because I also got chances to learn more skills. And right now, our company, our vision to become an automotive solutions company came from our experiences working for the biggest automotive brands in the world, which is Mercedes-Benz, Daimler, Mitsubishi, Freightliner, Mercedes-Benz. And that has given us the blueprint to come and realize that unless as a country we're producing something, we're just wasting time. So now we have successfully built a brand that is known by almost everyone here in Zimbabwe. They've read about it. They've used some of our products. And that's our first stepping stone. The next now is now that this brand must now be known by everyone in Africa. And then it must be accepted by everyone in Africa. It must be respected by everyone in Africa. And then it must be loved and used by everyone in Africa. That should be happening the next 10 to 15 years. After that, we are now taking it global, to Europe, to Asia, to the Americas. They will also come to love, appreciate, accept, and identify with Bona Group as a brand.
I see.
That's what we're fighting for.
Impressive.
Obviously, it's not easy. It requires lots of investment. You know, when you're building something, like when you build a house, you start with the foundation, you start by building down. Then when you build the foundation, nobody sees that foundation. People only start seeing you later on when you're building up the first story, second story, then they start seeing that, there's something being built there.
Yeah.
But when you're building the foundation, which is the most painful part, which is also the most important part as well, because that's what's created the DNA of the company. And that's what we've been doing the last 5 years since our inception in 2019. And we've successfully done that as well. We have now created a company culture, which is healthy. We've created core competence in certain people who become leaders of the company. And I'm very happy that now the company, though they still require me, but the company can go on its own because everyone has been programmed to identify, love, and also have ownership in the vision of the company. So even if I die today, I'm 100% convinced that Mona Group will continue to exist for the next 100 to 200 years, just like the Daimlers, just like the Mitsubishis, continue to exist, even though their founders have long passed on.
Impressive. Yeah. So I guess without further ado, maybe let's go ahead and deep dive into your company. Feel free to share any presentation or document that you have. Yeah.
Let me share just one. I'll not talk too much about this. I'll just share a few slides of what we are.
Yeah, please. That'll be helpful for the listener who may not be so familiar with the automotive industry.
Yeah, that's fine. Hmm. Yeah, so this is our company basically. And we are diversified since 2019. And right now we are the only company that is manufacturing car filters in Zimbabwe. So this is our logo, which is which I love because it's very enticing to know that sees it as well.
It's basically the thumbs up, right?
Thumbs up, yeah. Thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up. Yeah, simple logo. Simple yet elegant.
And this is me, my history. I worked in Japan, traveled to more than 100 countries. I speak English, Shona, which is my mother tongue, Japanese, and I'm also a karate instructor as well. I'm a first time black belt. So then, not that I'm a fighting man, but then that's what we've done. So our company has done some interesting things since our foundation in 2019. And right now, we're the only company that is manufacturing car filters here in Zimbabwe. And this is happening at a time when most people in Zimbabwe, they're just buying and selling. They are importing. Basically, everything is being imported. But we said, no, we will go for the hard way. We invest in the country, and we will invest to making a production base here in Zimbabwe. And because of that, our company, though very young, was voted Company of the Year in Zimbabwe in 2022. And the government of Zimbabwe also recognized us as the most innovative company in Zimbabwe in 2022. And we're also given the award of SME of the Year in this year as well. And we're heavily invested as a company in youth empowerment through the Code of Rugby. We are the biggest sponsor of rugby here in Zimbabwe. And we have just signed a $1 million sponsorship deal to sponsor schools rugby for the next 5 years.
Wow.
From this year until 2028. As a young company, this is a very big sacrifice, but we believe that unless we positively contribute to the development of youth in Zimbabwe, as a country, we are shooting ourselves in the foot. And, we have taken a different approach to achieving our goal. And our goal, like I've said, is to make a vehicle in Zimbabwe, a mass production vehicle that will be sold in Africa and beyond, but made in Zimbabwe.
You want to build vehicles, right? Are we talking like passenger cars or commercial vehicles?
We start with commercial vehicles and then we go into passenger vehicles later on. But we want to become your Daimler, want to become your Mitsubishi, want to become your Toyota. And now we are doing that by the bottom-up approach, in the sense that we'll start by producing different components of the vehicle. Now we're producing filters. Next, we're producing brake pads. Next, we're producing panels. Next, we're producing engines until you've got the whole platform
vehicle together,
made in Zimbabwe. Most people, they take the top-down approach where they're more like an assembler, where they buy different components from different manufacturers and then they just assemble the vehicle. But we have taken a slightly different approach in that we want to make the whole vehicle in Zimbabwe. More than 10,000 components in a vehicle. We want to make all of those components one by one being made here in Zimbabwe. At least 60% of the parts in our vehicle, they must be made in Zimbabwe by Mwana Group. That's the approach that we have taken.
Is there a particular significance for 60%?
In particular, but at least that is our milestone. At least if we produce 60% of vehicle in Zimbabwe, it becomes a Zimbabwean vehicle.
I see. But that makes sense. Yeah.
Most people they are going for the 100% import, which is also that cut many costs as well, because we're not producing our own support structure in Zimbabwe. And this is our modest factory, and we began the company almost 5 years ago. Now we've got more than 35 lines that we produce. All in total, we need to produce at least 3,500 lines for us to become viable as a company. And here you can see that some of our products that we have, some made in Zimbabwe, some being under contract manufacturing with our partners across the globe. And this is on the left there, you can see a picture of our products that is being used in a vehicle here in Zimbabwe.
By the way, what slide are you on right now? I'm still looking at the overall slide. I'm not sure if it's correct.
You can't see my slide right now?
I'm seeing the slide, but I'm at the main slide. Yeah. I'm not sure if this is... Yeah.
What can you see now?
I see the page number one.
I've moved.
Now it's updating, yeah.
Okay, I think there's something wrong.
Okay, all good.
You can see now?
Yeah, now I can see, yeah. Cool.
I think right now I'm on slide number 5 now.
Yep, okay, now we're good.
Yeah, so nothing makes me more happy than seeing our products being used by the, trusted by the people of Zimbabwe, and also now being exported to countries like Zambia, Rwanda, almost all the SADC countries. We now have an export line for our products there. And this is our dream, as you can see, that when these companies were made a long time ago, they're not what they are right now. But when people come and see us 100 years from now, they will see the company called Mwana Group that has revolutionized how things are done in Zimbabwe.
I see. 6 lines from 35 lines. Impressive. So are these like usually fast-moving parts? Are these slow-moving parts or a little bit of both?
These are fast-moving parts. These are fast-moving parts. These are filters.
Okay.
So, you know, right now, there are more than 500,000 trucks and buses in Zimbabwe. And every truck and bus requires a service kit, which is air filter, fuel filter, oil filter, cabin filter, air dryer, after every 10,000 kilometers, which is basically once every month. And the cost of that service kit is almost $200. So that means the market that we're trying to penetrate is 500,000 trucks and buses times 12 service kits per month times $200. So that's almost $1.5 billion of a market that we're trying to penetrate. And right now, all of that $1.5 billion worth of service kits is currently being imported. We're the only company that is manufacturing that locally in Zimbabwe. So we have a considerable market that we're targeting, which is very interesting, very, very interesting for us.
Impressive. So basically you build the whole factory from the ground up, right? Everything?
Yes, from zero, which is with zero capital, zero employees, zero sales. We built everything from zero and was built in Zimbabwe. In a very difficult environment where there are almost no credit lines. So we rely on our networks, on our well-wishers, on our friends, on our... Basically, it was built with a bootstrap budget, literally whatever that I had saved up. And that's what has built Mwana Group.
I see. So it began with the whatever you had savings left and then build from there. Yeah.
From zero.
Who do you have some, and then they probably raise money from angel rounds and, well, they call it angel round entrepreneurship, but basically raise money from friends and your networks, right?
Yeah, that's that what we did. Obviously, it's not enough, but the most important thing is to start, and we will not wait for the perfect chance to have first of all the resources. We said, okay, guys, let's use whatever that we have right now and use that as a starting point for us to start and move ahead.
I see. I think you mentioned earlier there's like, you know, I'm actually a numbers guy, so I love like talking about numbers stuff. You mentioned there's like 500,000, is it commercial vehicles in Zimbabwe?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Wow, that's quite a lot, actually. I don't know what's the, but like the population in Zimbabwe is what, about 15 million, right?
Correct, yeah.
That's quite a lot number of commercial vehicles. Is that, would you say that's like higher than average, lower than average compared to many other African countries?
Well, but compared to developing countries, that's very low.
Oh, really?
That's extremely low. Because we are still developing. There's need for more. There's need for more for more mechanization.
I
because
see.
Literally, there's a big gap of what of mobility, of goods, people. They all need mobility for the community to grow. It's a very small number.
I see. Yeah. So, I mean, according to my quick math, if I do it correctly, 15 million, 500,000. So, it's like one vehicle for every 30 people? Something
that's
like
correct.
That.
That's yeah. correct. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And would you say that's like one vehicle for every, what would be like the ideal number? One commercial vehicle for 10?
I would say 10.
20, 10. Okay.
Because remember, this is a commercial vehicle. We're talking about trucks, we're talking about buses, we're talking about
tractors, right? Yeah, tractors, yeah. Trucks.
And then
yeah,
if you look at the amount of trade that we have, we're an agro-based economy. That means all the produce needs to be moved. We are a mining-based economy. That means all the stuff that is being mined needs to be exported to the ports. Okay. And then that's a very high volume of stuff that needs to be moved. And right now there's a deficit of that which needs to be covered. And also we are an import-based economy as well. That means most of the stuff that we've got in Zimbabwe, the finished products, they need to be brought into the country. And right now our rail network is almost non-existent. That means everything is coming by road. And there's lots of trade between us and in the SADC region. So yeah, there's still a lot that needs to be done in that area.
Okay. Would you say I'm not so familiar with the economy in Zimbabwe. Would you say Zimbabwe is like the maybe one of the hub place or country in Africa?
We're not a trading hub, but we should be a trading hub because we are located right in the center of SADC. We have South Africa, we have Mozambique, we have Malawi, they all pass through Zimbabwe when they're doing their trade. And that's one area, if you look at the map of Zimbabwe, that's one area where we need to be a bit more strong and try to utilize our central location as a regional hub for Southern Africa, at least, at the very least.
I see.
This is
yeah.
trade, this is movement of people, this is flights, this is tourism. We are optimally located in such a way that we can easily become a hub.
I see. But I think you said earlier the main economy in Zimbabwe is still agriculture. Is that right?
Yes, it's still agriculture. It's an agro-based economy.
Would you say like 80%, 70-80% of the population work in agriculture, something like that?
No, I would say about 60%.
Okay. And what are the other 40%?
Other 40%, there's mining, and then there's people working in other sectors of the economy as well, tourism,
okay,
banking and stuff. But I would say 60% agriculture, 20% mining, and then the remaining 20% doing other things as well.
Okay, so mining seems like a pretty big part. Yeah,
it's a big chunk. I think right now our mining contribution to the GDP is like maybe more than 40% of our GDP.
Wow.
GDP comes from mining activities.
That's huge. And I guess for mining activities, they export, right? Export the minerals out of the country.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, nice. And then you are selling the parts for the vehicles that are used for mining, right?
That's correct.
That makes sense. Yeah, put it into. I'm just trying to put it into perspective. I mean, I know you and I, we both have like automotive knowledge because we both work in the industry. That's correct. People who don't work in the industry, right? Let's try to explain to them, yeah, make it in a layman term. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So for the slide here, is there any other slide you want to share?
No,
okay. You can quit the sharing. Yeah. Awesome. And then let's talk more about your companies. And what when you first began the company, what were some of the challenges that you faced, or even now?
So when we first began the company, our biggest challenge was people trying to accept that this is a local company making stuff in Zimbabwe. And that acceptability is the biggest chance. And then we learned that the only way to do that is to convince ourselves that we are just as good as any other foreign company. And once we're able to convince ourselves that, yes, we want a group, we're just as good as anyone else, it was much easier for us to convince the market to accept our products, because we had converted ourselves to the very first. And obviously, the challenges of fundraising. Here, our banking is almost collapsed. There are no credit lines, so we have to build everything with whatever that we have at our disposal from our friends and families. And for that, I'll always be thankful, because they've always been with me in my dream from the very beginning until where we are right now.
That's awesome to hear. When you said the banking collapse, do you think did that have to do with any of the hyperinflation that Zimbabwe suffered in the past?
Partly. Right now, there's no hyperinflation. I think inflation is around 10%, 5-10%,
which is normal. That's in control,
but because of some microeconomic challenges that we have as a country, we don't have any credit lines right now in the country. So whoever is an entrepreneur, you cannot go to a bank and ask for money, which is different from in America, where we never have an idea. They have a line of people waiting to come and finance you.
Yeah,
but now here, if you have an idea, it's your idea. You have to leave it, and you have to make it. With your bootstrapping budget, which is what we have done as a company.
I see. So people usually, if you seek capital, then they have to seek it from like friends, right? Family or some other.
Unfortunately.
Okay. What about is there a network of intra Africa, like among African country, for people to seek funding?
Not at the moment. Yeah. Which is why development is slowed in most African countries, because of the unavailability of capital. There's some very smart people with some very good ideas, but unless they have the capital to turn these ideas into products, into services, the continent will growth will always be slowed. And it's a real challenge that requires people to come together and shift from trying to give aid to people, trying to give donations to people, and then start supporting our entrepreneurs, for them to create the jobs, for them to create the services, for them to create the incomes to develop their countries. That's how I see it as well.
Yeah, it is true. I think the Africa as a continent is actually growing very fast, right? But also there's still a lot of challenges with infrastructure, with finance, like you said, with capital financing, and also many other challenges as well, right?
Which is normal for most developing countries, which is normal in Asia, which is normal in Europe, which is normal in America. Mm-hmm. And right now it's clear that Africa is the next frontier, and the next growth is coming from Africa. So I highly encourage people to look into Africa with a new perspective, that this is where there's the most growth, the most returns on investment. That's what I'm ambassador for. I represent that wherever I go.
Impressive. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, maybe talking about Africa a bit and maybe also about your country. Do you know what percentage of people who do not have a bank account in your country, maybe?
That is different. I think we all have bank accounts right now.
Oh, okay.
We all have bank accounts, just don't have access to capital.
Okay.
We all have bank accounts. Everyone, I think I would say maybe anyone that is above 18 years old has a bank account,
okay,
which is quite good. And I think anyone in Zimbabwe that's above 15 years has a cell phone. is very good. And then we have got a mobile banking system,
okay,
which is quite developed. M-Pesa, EcoCash and stuff, Cassava.
Oh, M-Pesa so from are, Kenya.
Yeah, similar okay. concept.
Hmm.
But here it's called EcoCash from the Equipment Holdings Group.
Okay.
So we are all are banked, but then we just don't have access to credit lines.
That's interesting. So where do the banks get the money from then if they cannot give out the loans? I'm wondering.
They get their money from which is very stupid. They make most of their money from service charges.
Service charges, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really a sustainable way or not. Because
it's not sustainable.
I see.
So they make most of their money from service charges.
I see. You know, but for all the big banks that I know of, right, in Japan, in US, or in wherever, right, usually they make money from loans, right?
Correct.
They give out loans, that's where you get interest, and then maybe you can do some sort of maybe like high private net worth individual, and also maybe you can do some investment banking, right?
Yes.
Different sector, but
that's how it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not working like that. They make most of their money from service charges, and their interest rates are quite crazy. Yeah, around 160%
per annum.
Per annum, yeah.
Wow, that is really high. Yeah, that is really high.
Wow, so that's a business.
Yeah, and I guess that's probably the reason why people don't really try to borrow a loan, right?
Because there's not enough credit, so because of that, the cost of credit is very high.
I see. Makes sense then, yeah.
Okay.
So link to that. Okay. I see. And now, for now, coming back to your company, how many people are in your company right now? Maybe
give a... Right now, we're at about 35 people right now.
35 people, okay.
35
and people. How many people work in the factory? How many work in the... office or whatever.
It's mainly in the factory.
Okay.
Mainly in the factory.
In the factory. Awesome.
Yeah.
And how many factory do you operate at the moment?
Only one.
Only one. At that factory, basically, you have like an assembly line or something.
This is a filter production line. I think I've shown some slides there. We're just making filters.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Impressive. And then, of course, in the future, you have planned to expand on. Many other
in the future, line. we want to expand to other things as well. We want to expand to brake pads. We want to expand to other things as well. We want to expand to panels. We want to expand to engine components until we're making a full vehicle in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, full commercial vehicle, right?
You said commercial vehicle. Yeah,
impressive. Can you share with us maybe number of filters that have been sold, or how many countries you export to, or maybe some of the other things. But
now we have 35 lines that we produce in Zimbabwe, mostly air filters. And
okay.
Then we also have got things that we that are under contract manufacturing with some of our suppliers across the globe, and that's another almost 70 lines that we can produce in Zimbabwe that will make a product offering of around 100 lines.
I see. So you also build, so you also supply for, would you say, so I remember back in my automotive days that you have like a OEM and then you have tier one, tier two, tier three. Which tier is your company in?
That is for the vehicle production line. So tier one are the Mercedes-Benz, tier two are the suppliers of parts to Mercedes-Benz, then tier three. The suppliers to the OEMs.
Correct. Yeah.
So not yet in that line, but we are producing what they call aftermarket support. That means when you buy your car, you want a service. You want to buy a filter, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You have filters from Mercedes-Benz, which is your OEM part, and then you have aftermarket parts that you can that are all making the same parts but with their own brand. That's the space which we're in.
I see. So I think your main competition should be just import, right? All of the imports.
Imports.
But you are like the main domestic brand that are building for the country.
That's correct. Yeah.
Interesting. So if I understand correctly, you have three different type of businesses for your company? One is a manufacturing.
Yes. One is spare parts. We are the exclusive distributor for DFT, which is a brand from Dubai, and then we are also into service space as well. We run a few workshops in Zimbabwe where we service people's cars, service, you know, engine repairs and stuff. We do that as well. So we have three main areas: spare parts, service, and manufacturing.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, trying to make like almost like a full service solution, right? For the end user. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
one become one stop shop.
One stop shop. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then in the future, when you sell like the vehicle as well, then I think it'll be fully one stop shop, right?
That's what we want to do.
Just like awesome. Yeah. I saw on your website in the past that you were trying to fundraise for the Metal Foundry, maybe something along the line, 100 people for whatever number of contribution. How did that go?
And we tried to raise $100,000 to build a foundry. Unfortunately, it was not successful. So we didn't raise enough money to set the foundry. So now we have to go the painful route of raising the money from ourselves to finance that growth. It's unfortunately, but we have to push ahead. Yeah,
have to push ahead for sure. Can you tell me what is like your thinking behind the Metal Foundry? I'm trying to wrap my head around like what's the purpose for Metal Foundry?
Foundry, you know, is the smelting, molding, and machining of metal into usable products. Right now, our country is exporting scrap metal at around 2 cents per kg, and importing finished products at around $15 per kg. That means it's not sustainable for us, and we can easily make these things here in Zimbabwe.
Can you explain to me why? So they selling for two cents.
We are selling metal, scrap metal, and metal ore, iron ore, at less than 2 cents per kg.
Is that high or low?
That's very low. We're selling at 2 cents per kg, and importing at $15 per kg.
Oh, for the metals itself or the parts?
Oh, the metal. The finished product.
Got it. Yeah.
At $15 per kg.
I see. So there's a huge gap.
It's not sustainable. It's too big.
I see.
It's pathetic.
Okay. It's pathetic. So by having this metal foundry, your hope is to drive up the price somewhat? Or what is your expectation?
Localize those exports, those imports, to make things local in Zimbabwe, to create value addition in Zimbabwe, and also improve our product offering. Now include things like brake disc, brake pads, engine components, metal products here in Zimbabwe. That was our aim, still is our aim, when the foundry goes online, was to do that.
I see. And then assume that you were able to raise the money successfully, how long would it take to, I guess, set up the metal factory, and how long will we get to get it running?
Once all the money was to be in place, this will be up and running in less than 6 months.
Okay. So you have to build a new factory, right? Only a new foundry.
Yes.
Right? And so then
we had bought the land. We still have the land.
Okay.
And we just need funding for mechanization and construction.
I see. What would be required? I see. What would be required to run a metal foundry? You need humans, right? And machine?
Yes, we've got the skills, we've got the machinery, we've got the skills. Yes, they have the machinery that we wanted to import from Europe and in China. That's why we're fundraising for that. But unfortunately, it didn't work out.
I see. Yeah. Well, anyway, you just always have to try on. Yeah, I don't think,
we have to push ahead.
Yeah, I think that's one of the common challenge with running a small company, right? Yeah, always.
That's correct.
Probably how figuring out how to get the money. I think you mentioned earlier you also, your company is sponsoring for the rugby league, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And is this just one of the non-profit arm of your Moana group? Or
that is correct. That's part of giving back to society. Nice. And it's also part of marketing our brand as well, but it's more like trying to give back to people, to develop people, to encourage people to stay away from drugs and engage in sport, to become more disciplined people. That's why we're investing in this.
Is rugby the most popular sport in Zimbabwe?
No, the most popular sport is football. But I just okay. wanted to start to try introduce a new sporting code.
I see. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a rugby watcher, so I don't even follow much. I don't know who's a strong team.
This one will be very big, and I encourage you that you should come and watch if you're around.
Okay. Yeah.
We're looking at having at least more than 100,000 people coming to watch this tournament.
Really?
Sponsored. Yeah.
Okay. Wait, is this international, or is this only national level?
This is international. This is international.
Okay.
This will be international.
Between Zimbabwe and other African countries, or also all
over the world. We're hoping to get teams from Japan. We're going to get teams from Romania, from Europe, from the Americas, and obviously from Africa as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be international. It's very big. More than 100 teams will be participating in this festival. It's called the Mana Group International Schools Rugby Festival. Let me share a slide.
Sure. Go ahead. Please do.
It might bring a bit more perspective into this.
Sure, certainly. And you said school rugby. So this is like for like kids in high schools?
Both primary school, which is the ones who are below under 13, under 16, and under 19.
Okay, so they divide the three different leagues, and sounds like
Can you see it?
Okay. Yes, it's loading. Oh yeah, nice. Okay. Oh wow, lovely.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
So this will be very big. Yeah, it's happening next year in April.
Okay.
So you've got very interesting, very interesting, very interesting.
So it's like 1 week league, right? The league itself is 1 week.
Yeah. One week festival, yeah.
100 teams, 300 matches. Wow, that's a lot of. Sharing. Nice.
This will be very interesting. Very, very big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck. I think I hope it goes well. Yeah.
No, it will go well because we're working very hard on this, and I'm sure it will go well.
I see. Are you looking for a sponsor for this, or for other people, some other company who are also sponsoring?
Yeah, some other companies also come on board as well to help us make this success, because this is a national project and it requires people from all over the whole country to come on board and make this a success.
Nice, thank you. Yeah, I hope that it will be a success.
Sounds like
fun.
It's fun. It's great fun. It's great fun.
Okay. Yeah. So, coming back to your company. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing this. Coming back to your company, then. I guess your company basically operating in the automotive space, right? Industry. So maybe can you share with us, like, where do you think the automotive industry or your industry is heading in the next like 3 to 5 years?
It's very interesting. Right now, we've got some very interesting things happening in the automotive industry. As you know, that's the biggest industry in the whole world. Huh?
Yeah, last year,
out of our the global GDP was around $80 trillion.
Mm.
And of that $80 trillion, $5 trillion came from automotive industry alone.
Yeah, it's huge.
That means globally, the automotive industry is about 5 to 10% of the whole global industry, commerce and trade. Is the automotive industry. And now we've got electric vehicles coming in, we've got autonomous driving coming in as well. These are all new concepts that will make life better for everyone. And Africa is also catching up as well. We're not being left behind. We're also investing heavily in R&D and trying to catch up to the global trends.
Yeah. And are there any particular trends in Africa regarding automotive that is somewhat like very particular to Africa compared to the rest of the world?
So right now, as you know, most of the lithium that is the key component for making batteries is mined in Africa. Now we are now localizing that value addition, so that we are no longer exporting raw lithium, but rather asking people to invest in industries and factories to manufacture the batteries and value addition locally in Africa. And that's where Africa will play a leading role in the global automotive trade through the manufacturing of batteries locally in Africa.
I see. Yeah, and I think lithium would be very critical for a lot of different Yeah.
It is very critical. It's the main component for battery production.
Okay. And I think, by selling the battery itself compared to selling just the, the resource, I think the value is higher, right? You can probably...
it's 100 times higher. 100
times higher. Sure.
Mm-hmm. 100 times higher.
I see.
100 times higher.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I think the economics of it makes sense, right? But you have to make people realize that. I guess you're also trying to capture a part of this, right?
That's fine.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. And then maybe can you share with us what is your company goals in the next several years?
By 2050, we want to be making
2050? 2050? Okay. Yes. So like 26 years from now? Lovely.
We're going to be making a full vehicle in Zimbabwe.
Impressive.
We're making a full vehicle in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only KPI which you've got. By 2050, once you're making a vehicle in Zimbabwe.
Okay. Impressive. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. With Moana.
And that vehicle will be sold globally. And hopefully you also have the same vehicle in Japan, in Vietnam, in Europe, everywhere. That'll be our biggest contribution to humanity.
Impressive. Yeah. Looking forward to that. Yeah. 26 years from now. Yeah. So just maybe two more questions from my side. Do you have any advice for future entrepreneurs?
Yes, my own advice to all entrepreneurs is that you must believe in your dream and then you must start doing something on the ground. Don't wait for the perfect chance to come because the perfect chance will never come. The most important thing is to start and to start now. And that's the only regret which I have as an entrepreneur is that I didn't start early enough. But the most important thing is to start and to start immediately.
I see.
That's the most important.
Start immediately. Thank you. Yeah, that's a beautiful message. Okay. And final question is, where can people follow you or where can people find you, your company?
Yeah, they're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter as well. Just look for Moana Group. Also, our website is moanagroup.com.
Okay.
We post regularly almost on a daily basis our success and tribulations. They're all there. And I think we have a beautiful story. And our mantra is made in Zimbabwe, by Zimbabweans, for Africa and beyond. And it's a beautiful thing. Please let's become part of the dream and let's make it a reality. Because our success is everyone's success.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll make sure to share the links in the show notes so people can actually follow and take a look at it.
Really appreciate it.
Once again, Kuda, thank you so much for joining this episode. It's been really great fun talking to you.
And thank you, my brother.
I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, and hope to see you sometime in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
And we are back to my studio. What do you guys think about this 11th episode of Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship? This episode was mainly about entrepreneurship, so there wasn't really any parts related to Web3. But I would love to hear your feedbacks and comments. For the next episode, we'll be talking with Oisin, who is the CEO of Missio.ai. He's building an AI power insights platform for communities. It will be a very interesting episode, and we'll be back to the Web3 world. Anyway, if you like this episode, please give a like and subscribe. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.